Go Law Enforcement.
Go Law Enforcement.
Go Law Enforcement.
Go Law Enforcement. The podcast that makes your law enforcement dreams happen.
Welcome to the Go Law Enforcement podcast, brought to you by GoLawEnforcement.com. I'm your host, Joe Lebowski. Passing the police exam is a vital step towards becoming a law enforcement officer. GoLawEnforcement.com can help you pass the police exam and get a score that will get you hired. Check out GoLawEnforcement.com. People choose a career in law enforcement for a variety of reasons. For some, they've always wanted to be in law enforcement, even from an early age. For others, it can be an event that occurs in their life, which can end up causing a total change in their career. Jennifer Price Lehman was in college on her way to becoming a fashion designer when a horrific event occurred in her family. This changed her career path to law enforcement and helping save abducted children.
Hello, my name is Jennifer Price Lehman, and I am currently the program manager for the Amber Alert Training and Technical Assistance Program with the National Criminal Justice Training Center of Fox Valley Technical College. And prior to that, I was the Director of Special Operations for the Wisconsin Department of Justice Division of Criminal Investigation and was in law enforcement for 24 years. My interest in law enforcement began kind of an interesting path, actually, when I was in college in the early 1990s. I was enrolled in the University of Wisconsin-Madison in their apparel design program, because at the time when I was in high school and just getting into college, I decided that I really wanted to be a fashion designer. I wanted to make clothes for a living and live in the big city. And that all changed, actually. During my college years, I had a family tragedy, and that really changed the trajectory of my career path and my interest in law enforcement. So, you know, I never really had an interest in law enforcement growing up. I remember the day I was working at the athletic department at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, where I held a job as a college student trying to make some extra money on the side. And my mom called and told me that my cousin was missing. He was 14 years old, and he went missing on July 4th, 1994. And I immediately then started working on how I can help to try to find him. I mean, he was 14 at the time, so certainly old enough to run away and just not reach out. But we knew that wasn't the case here. There was evidence at the home that there had been potentially some forced entry. There was also evidence that Chris left, perhaps not necessarily by force, but certainly not necessarily under circumstances that wouldn't be quite as concerning. He left it late at night and was gone in the morning. My mom sent me a missing persons poster, and for the next several days, I was getting ready to get posters up all around campus, thinking, you know, maybe somebody might know something. Well, my cousin was from Baraboo, Wisconsin, which is about 45-ish miles northwest of Madison, Wisconsin. And so he wasn't old enough to drive, but, you know, I thought, I've got to do something here. And so I found a way to get posters printed, because you have to remember, it's 1994. So there's no mobile devices, and there's no email, wasn't really a big thing. So, you know, it's like you got to mail a poster and then put it on the Xerox and print it out and make photocopies. And I was doing that. And I remember also the day, and my mom called and said, if you've already put up posters, don't put any more up, because they found Chris's body. And so Chris was found. He was deceased, and he was found in the river in the next county over from Sauk County, which is where Baraboo is located. And at the time, we didn't know what happened because he was in the water. So initially, our thought and the law enforcement response was that he went into the water on his own and drowned. It's a fast-moving river. There's a lot of undercurrent. And so that was really what we thought. That's what law enforcement thought, frankly. So now it's, you know, after the 4th of July holiday, he was gone for about a week, just under a week before he was found. Fast forward now to July of 1995. So it's a year after Chris died, and a boy in Baraboo, his name is Thad Phillips, who's 13 at the time, also goes missing. And Thad was gone for, gosh, it was a couple of days, I think. And he was tortured. His legs were broken in several places. And as it turns out, his legs were broken by a young man, really still a juvenile at the time, 17-year-old Joe Clark. And what had happened was Joe Clark went to Thad's house. Thad left. And I think if you were to read the accounts of this particular case, you'd learn that Thad wasn't removed from the house necessarily by force. It was late at night. He was groggy. He thought that Joe was someone else. I think he said he thought it, maybe it was an uncle or something. And so it's late and Thad is leaving his home with Joe. Joe takes Thad to Joe's house and over the next couple of days tortures Thad and breaks his bones in his legs. Thad can't walk. And he realizes that the situation is not good. And of course, he's in a lot of pain. And as time goes by and he's stuck in this horror that he can't get out of because Joe's not letting him leave. So fast forward to Thad being able to basically army crawl down the steps from Joe's bedroom to the main level of Joe's house when Joe was gone, his parents were gone, and Thad was able to get the phone off the wall. Again, picture in your mind, this 13-year-old boy, it's been a couple of days. He's tired. He's hungry. He's in pain. He's got broken bones. And he was able to get the phone, grab the cord, get the phone off the wall, and he called 911. And thank goodness he did, because who knows what would have happened to Thad had he not been able to get the strength to call for help. And here's where my cousin's case comes into play. While Thad was being tortured by Joe Clark, Joe talked about my cousin Chris. So Thad mentioned my cousin to the responding law enforcement and to the detectives. And it was at that point that my cousin's case took a whole different direction. And my cousin's body was exhumed, and law enforcement learned from their investigation into reopening my cousin's case that my cousin's legs were broken in the same manner that Thad's were broken. And so began a homicide case into my cousin's disappearance. And law enforcement was able to determine what really happened with Chris. And he also was I don't want to say necessarily abducted by Joe, not really in the true sense of the word, right? That we think of when we hear abduction, we think that a small child is being forcibly removed from their setting by a scary man. And that wasn't the case here. Chris went missing. He never, ever, of course, was expecting that he would never come back. Joe wasn't a friend of Chris's. He, you know, they think they were acquaintances, but they weren't, my understanding, they weren't friends. But what we soon learned was that Chris was tortured much in the same manner, we believe, that Thad was. And then my cousin was put into the water by Joe, and he drowned because his legs were broken and he couldn't swim. And that is a difficult image to get out of your head as a person who investigated missing children for many years. That would be an image for me to get, very difficult to get out of my head. But as a surviving family member, that's not something that you can ever release. And what we were pleased to have happen was Joe was charged with my cousin's murder and he was convicted. So he was arrested in July of 1995 and he was charged and later convicted of not just my cousin's murder, but he was also charged and convicted for the torture and abuse and mental harm and child enticement that he committed against Thad Phillips. So Joe Clark is now serving a 100-year sentence in the Wisconsin State Prison sentence system. And so really, that was how I came into law enforcement, because it was at that point that I realized that maybe being a fashion designer wasn't what I was meant to do. And so I changed my major in college and changed it to criminal justice and behavioral science and law. And I then graduated 2 years later with a Bachelor of Arts in behavioral science and law and a certificate, which is really like a minor in criminal justice. And from there, I applied at police departments in Wisconsin. And I started then my law enforcement career as a patrol officer at the Wausau Police Department, which is in northern Wisconsin. And I worked there for a few years before I saw a posting for a job at the Wisconsin Department of Justice as a special agent. And I knew going into my law enforcement career that I wanted to work cases involving missing children because of what happened with my cousin Chris. So I applied then at the Wisconsin Department of Justice and I got the job. And I was so excited to be a special agent, but I didn't start working missing children's cases. I mean, it's 1999 now, and there was no Amber Alert program. There was no child abduction response team in Wisconsin or the U.S. for that matter. When my cousin was murdered, when Thad Phillips went missing and tortured, or when I started with the Wisconsin Department of Justice. And so I started out as a narcotics agent investigating drug crimes. And I did that for 6-7 years. And at that point, then an opening came up in our Internet Crimes Against Children unit. And I was really passionate about that work. And so I was lucky to be able to transfer into that unit still as a special agent. And it was at that point that I really started working with our Wisconsin clearinghouse manager. And understanding what the Amber Alert program really is in Wisconsin and also nationally. So I continue to work child exploitation and internet crimes against children for several years and was promoted to a special agent in charge overseeing the Wisconsin ICAC task force and also the internet crimes against children, so ICAC unit at the Wisconsin Department of Justice. And from there, I started with a handful of other Division of Criminal Investigation or DCI colleagues at that time, and this was in 2008, and we developed the Wisconsin Department of Justice's Child Abduction Response Team. And so I was excited to be one of the founding members of that team, and then was later promoted again to the Director of Special Operations. As the Director of Special Operations, two of the programs that were in the Bureau that I led was our Amber Alert program and the Clearinghouse for Missing Persons, but also the Child Abduction Response Team. And then I became the commander of our Child Abduction Response Team and led the team to a number of deployments and activations to missing children throughout the state of Wisconsin. And I felt that was really where I was meant to be. And I'll share a short story about when I first started in the ICAC unit and was field training with one of our most experienced special agents, not only in the ICAC unit, but in the division at that time. And I was sharing with him the story about my cousin Chris and how I started my college career thinking I was going to be a fashion designer and walked through the story that I just shared here. And I'll never forget, we were in the car on the way to have lunch, and I was sharing this story with him, and he looked at me and he said, this is your destiny. This is what you were meant to do. So child abduction response teams respond to missing and endangered children. In general, a child abduction response team is a multidisciplinary team of individuals who receive specialized training in missing, endangered, and abducted children to more effectively respond to a missing child case in a timely manner. And so when a child goes missing, time is of the essence. We know that we are up against the clock in trying to find this missing child. And so a child abduction response team is a team of individuals who are able to swiftly respond as a team and in a coordinated manner to really focus on efforts to find a missing child. What happens oftentimes with law enforcement, they respond to a missing child, and these missing child cases can sometimes take many hours and days, and they're very resource heavy. And most law enforcement agencies, even the largest law enforcement agencies, don't have all of the resources to be able to sustain a missing child investigation that can go into days, or in the case of Jamie Kloss, weeks and months. So that's what the child abduction response team does, is really enhance the effort of the initial law enforcement response and provide a coordinated effort to be able to focus on finding that child. A few years ago, the Wisconsin Department of Justice team became the first U.S. DOJ certified child abduction team in Wisconsin. And since then, there's been another team that has certified with the U.S. DOJ. And there will certainly be more teams in Wisconsin that will certify. And nationally, there are many child abduction response teams who are certified through U.S. DOJ as part of the program that I'm working for right now, the Amber Alert Training and Technical Assistance Program. So then, what is the difference between CART and Amber? And it's important to understand that the Amber Alert is what I'm sure you all know. You've received the alerts on your phones, you've seen them on TV, you've heard them on the radio, and that is a quick way to get the information out to the public on the missing child, any suspect or vehicle information. But that doesn't necessarily mean that just because there's an Amber Alert that there will be a CART activation and deployment. Sometimes the law enforcement agency of jurisdiction doesn't need the assistance of an outside CART. Maybe they have their own CART, or maybe the investigation doesn't necessarily warrant a CART at that point. So it's important to remember that not every Amber Alert comes with a child abduction response team deployment. Not every CART activation and deployment results in an Amber Alert. And in Wisconsin, at the Wisconsin Department of Justice, our criteria for deploying and activating a child abduction response team is different than the criteria for activating an Amber Alert. And all 50 states have an Amber Alert. And while some of the criteria may differ a little bit from state to state, overwhelmingly, you'll see that the Amber Alert criteria is you have a missing child, age 17 or younger, the child is in danger of death or great bodily harm, and that you have enough information about the child, the suspect, and or the vehicle, or any information that might aid the public in finding that child. And those three criteria are the criteria for the Wisconsin Amber Alert. And in Wisconsin, when a law enforcement agency has a missing child and they think that the criteria is met for the activation of an Amber Alert, the Wisconsin Amber Alert plan calls for the local law enforcement agency of jurisdiction to request an Amber Alert of the Wisconsin Department of Justice. There are law enforcement supervisors from the Division of Criminal Investigation who are on call 24/7, 365 to field any requests from local law enforcement for the activation of an Amber Alert. And when the request comes in to DCI and it's approved as an Amber Alert activation, there are a number of steps that immediately go into play to make sure that that Amber Alert is activated as quickly as possible. Think of it as a wheel, and that there are a number of different spokes of the wheel that will come into play so that alert gets pushed out as quickly as possible, not just in the traditional emergency alerting system. So like what you would see on the TV with the message scrolling and the loud notification, or on the radio, but also the wireless emergency alert that you get on your mobile device. And then secondary distribution through things like social media, or in Wisconsin, through a partnership with the Wisconsin Lottery and displaying the missing child information, the lottery terminals throughout the state. We also have a partnership with the Wisconsin Department of Transportation. And when there's an Amber Alert, the Wisconsin Department of Transportation posts vehicle information, for example, on the dynamic messaging boards throughout the state, that will allow anyone who is driving a vehicle on any of the highways where those messaging signs are located, that they can see that there's an Amber Alert, and they'll get a vehicle description right away. There's no better way, in my opinion, to get vehicle information out on a suspect in a vehicle that might be traveling in our state than through the Wisconsin Department of Transportation's highway messaging boards, because not everybody's going to be listening to the radio while they're driving. They may have the Amber Alert notification silenced on their phone and they're driving, but they see that message board. What a great way to be able to get information out to the public when we have vehicle information for a suspect that has abducted a child. In terms of tips and leads management in a missing child investigation, it is so critically important to follow up on every single lead that comes in. It's not uncommon for CARTs to receive tips and leads from, for example, from psychics who would report, for example, I sense that this child is drawn to water and you need to search this body of water. And we may think, well, that's not the information that we're getting in our investigation. There's no indication that the child is drawn to water, but law enforcement still has to follow up on that because you just never know. Maybe in this instance, the child was drawn to water. I can tell you, my cousin was not drawn to water as a 14-year-old teenager. But guess what? He was found in the water. And so it's so important when you're going through the tips that are coming in through your tip line to follow up on every single one and have a system of managing those tips and leads so that law enforcement knows which tips have been followed up on, which ones still need to be followed up on. And in doing so, then you know that there aren't any tips and leads that are going untouched. One of the areas that is really vital in a missing child investigation and for the CARTs to be able to make sure that they follow up on is a comprehensive search and canvas. And as I mentioned, time is of the essence when you have a missing child investigation. And it's important that law enforcement and child abduction response teams really focus on a solid search and canvas effort. So, for example, when you know the area where the child was last seen, the place last seen, you want to be able to focus your initial search efforts in those areas. It might be, for example, in the middle of a neighborhood in an urban community. And it may seem daunting, like, oh my gosh, this is an apartment building with 200 units. And the child was last seen in the parking lot of this apartment complex. Not to mention now we have single family homes that surround this apartment complex and we have businesses. How in the world are we going to do this? And that's really where the CART comes in to supplement the efforts, the ongoing efforts of law enforcement and their initial response. And so every door needs to be knocked on. If there's 200 units in that apartment building, then you have to knock on every 200 units, every single door. And if you knock on the door and no one answers, then you have to go back. It's much like the tips and leads that I mentioned before. You can't leave any stone unturned. And in the case of a search and canvas, when you don't go back to a residence or an apartment where you didn't initially get an answer, that's a stone that's unturned. And that might just be the apartment where the child is being held captive. Imagine if it was your child. You would want law enforcement to go back as many times as it takes to find your child. We can't discount businesses that there are a lot of leads that you can glean from businesses in the area where a child goes missing from, whether it be surveillance cameras or witness interviews. There's all kinds of resources that are available, but it comes down to those search efforts and being able to hone in on the areas where the child may have been seen by somebody or something like a camera and get that video footage and continue to work your case that way. So another area that is really important to follow up on is social media. Children, even at younger and younger ages, are getting on to social media platforms using mobile devices sometimes still using a traditional computer or laptop. And that's really should be considered another lead that needs to be followed up on. Just like a child can leave their fingerprint at the scene, they can leave their fingerprint wherever they were, they can leave a digital fingerprint as well. And so it's so important to follow up on where the child was in the moments, in the hours leading up to the child's disappearance, to try to identify if there is a connection between the child's social media activity and their disappearance. Did they meet someone online, and did they meet that person in person and then leave, whether willingly or by force? Is the child with that person that they first met online? And those can give you a lot of information on where to focus some of your efforts. And so it's important too to follow those leads. So for example, the child goes missing on a Monday. You don't want to just look at the child's social media activity over the weekend leading up to their disappearance. You need to look at, is there any activity now that the child is missing? Are they still active on their social media or not? For a child who's really, really active on social media leading up to their disappearance and then following their disappearance, have no social media presence at all, that's concerning. So why not? And why is the child not able to connect to their social media? And that can give a lot of information about the child itself, his or her patterns of behavior, and then looking at after the child goes missing, what sort of patterns or behaviors are still present in their social media or absent. So in order to approve any Amber Alert request that comes in to the Wisconsin Department of Justice, the case has to be evaluated. And there's a whole spectrum of missing children cases, all the way from your true non-family stranger abduction, where you have a child who is forcibly removed from their setting from a stranger and taken. Then you have, for example, a biological parent. Maybe the parent has custodial rights and physical placement. Maybe they don't. One parent takes a child and leaves, and the other parent is left reporting the child to law enforcement. And the evaluation is the same. Is it a child age 17 or younger? Is there a danger of death or great bodily harm? And is there enough descriptive information about the child or the suspect or the vehicle to put out to the public? In the age and the descriptive information, those are easy. We've got a child. We know that it's a child. We also have enough information about the child based on the information that, for example, the biological parent is reporting to law enforcement, and the clothes the child was wearing, the other parent's name and information in the vehicle they're driving. So the first two criteria are met. It's the third criteria that can be very difficult, particularly when you have a missing child who is taken by a biological parent. So even though it's a bio parent, we know that sometimes parents kill their children. And in evaluating whether to activate the Amber Alert, we have to think about the endangerment and the danger that the child is in, even though they're with their parent. I continued my work in Amber and CART, Child Abduction Response Teams, through the rest of my career at DOJ and in law enforcement. And in 2020, an opening became available at the National Criminal Justice Training Center in the Amber Alert Training and Technical Assistance Program. And I had had contacts over the years with NCJTC, National Criminal Justice Training Center, and the Amber Alert Program through the Training and Technical Assistance, because I was a recipient of the training that they offered. And I thought, wow, I've been in law enforcement at that point 23-ish years and thought that really this is the next step, is really to take my experience of having a family member, a child in the family who went missing and was murdered, my experience in law enforcement, leading Amber Alert and a child abduction team, and taking it really to the next level and sharing what I think I had to offer, but on a national stage. And that's what I did. My current role with the Amber Alert Training and Technical Assistance Program is as a program manager. And in my role, I work with a team of people within the Amber Alert Training and Technical Assistance Program to deliver training to law enforcement and other criminal justice practitioners in the area of missing children, to include leveraging any technology to enhance their capabilities and competencies of law enforcement in the safe recovery of missing and endangered children. And we can't forget the Amber and Indian Country program that we have through the Amber Alert Training and Technical Assistance Program. And through the Amber Alert and Indian Country Initiative, we work directly with the tribal communities across the country to make sure that they have the training and technology to be able to enhance their capabilities to respond to a missing, exploited, or endangered child. One area that is often overlooked in law enforcement who are working in child exploitation, missing and abducted children, human trafficking, children who have been trafficked, is the well-being of the individuals who are working these cases. As I described my cousin's case, you may have felt a sense of emotion or sadness. Your imagination probably was thinking how horrific some of these, all of these missing children cases are, but some more so than others. And so it's important to not overlook the value and the criticality of wellness offerings for not just law enforcement, but anyone who is working a missing, exploited, or endangered child case, because they can change your soul. And if you're working child exploitation full time, day in and day out, that takes a toll on your psyche. It takes a toll on who you are as a person, how you respond to your family and friends, how you respond to strangers, what you think about the world. And it's important to be able to have healthy outlets to keep yourself not just physically healthy, but your mind space healthy and your mental health in check. And there should be no stigma anymore. We have reached a point, particularly in law enforcement, where well-being and wellness initiatives are becoming far more commonplace than they were when I started 24 years ago. You just didn't talk about what things were bothering you back then because you just didn't do it. So whether you're just going into this field or you've been in law enforcement, don't forget to keep yourself well.
Passing the police exam is a vital step towards becoming a law enforcement officer. GoLawEnforcement.com can help you pass the police exam and get a score that will get you hired. Check out GoLawEnforcement.com. Thanks for listening.